Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet him, greet him, treat him, and street him. Today's date is May 12, 2017, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Mindfulness. It's not better to burn out than it is to rust. And I have a great guest skeptic. It's Dr. Diane Birnbaumer, and she is a senior clinical faculty at Harbor UCLA Medical Center in Torrance, California. She is also an emeritus professor of medicine at the David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA. Welcome to the SGM, Diane.
Hey, Ken. I'm delighted to be here with the grand skeptic.
Well, it's great to have an EM legend on the show this week.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. It makes me sound old, but I guess if the shoe fits.
Well, you know, if you listen carefully, we are recording this at the Emergency Medicine and Critical Care Conference in beautiful Hilton Head, South Carolina.
I think they can almost hear the waves on
the
this.
Ocean.
We can see them, but they can almost hear them. It's so much fun here. My husband's from South Carolina, and it's really fun to watch him walk down memory lane while we're walking around here. There's nothing like the low country food. This is absolutely delicious.
Well, we're going to make this kind of meta. We're recording it by the beach. We've got the ocean view. The breeze is in your hair.
It is. It's blowing it all over the place.
What a wonderful setting to talk about burnout, stress, and mindfulness and meditation.
You know, Ken, it turns out this is a very timely topic. I've gotten very interested in burnout and resilience. And to be honest, near the end of my full-time career, I've gone part-time since, I was sort of the poster child for burnout. So as part of my personal exploration of the topic, I looked into options of ways to deal with burnout. And I developed a lecture for our residency program that basically is a toolbox of ways to deal with and perhaps even prevent burnout. I gave it several months ago, and I'm not sure anyone took it to heart. Or maybe somebody did.
I think somebody probably did. Now, how about you give us a case?
Well,
highlight.
Let me sort of launch on that. So I have a wonderful resident who clearly was having some trouble at work, feeling very tired, incredibly short-tempered. His interactions at work were clearly being affected. And his personal sense of satisfaction, there was no question he was much less satisfied with his job. And he and I sort of talked about how he was feeling and whether there might be some burnout involved. And I'll tell you more later what happened with him.
Well, okay. We look forward to hearing about that. But we better tell the SGMers a bit about physician burnout.
Well, it's a hot topic. It's been in the newspapers. Mindfulness, as far as just the practice of mindfulness, has hit the front pages of the New York Times and Time Magazine. In fact, the New York Times has now a little section every day that has to do with mindfulness and sort of your daily OM equivalent. It put it front and center in the public eye. And the term burnout, like we think about in the physicians that we deal with, was a term coined by Herbert Freudenberger in 1974.
Notice how I gave
nice.
You that difficult
Freud
name.
And Freud. I love the fact that Freud is part of his name.
Freudenberger. Mm-hmm. Now there are a number of ways to define burnout, but one of the most widely known is the one by Maslach. And Maslach burnout inventory score is what people may be familiar with. It has three components, including emotional exhaustion, depersonalization, and reduced feelings of personal accomplishment.
You know, that's a survey that some ASAP members who are listening to your podcast may be familiar with. If any of you went to the wellness booth for the last, I think over 20 years, actually, the wellness booth at ASAP during our scientific assembly has offered the burnout inventory as one thing you can do to measure your own wellness. I've actually been taking it annually. I keep them every year, and it's been fascinating to watch my scores literally swing all over the place over the years of my practice.
Well, physicians have reported a high level of burnout, and a recent study on U.S. physicians showed that more than 50% had at least one symptom of burnout. And emergency physicians, we're right there at the top. The highest prevalence of burnout, somewhere around 70%.
Yeah, this is not something to be proud of, to be a leader in. We are clearly at the top of the pack in this. It can have a lot of negative consequences. It can lead to depression, suicidal ideation in physicians, illness, increased alcohol use. It's also been associated with negative impacts on patient care, such as self-perceived medical error, the risk of medical errors committing them, and quality of care. Many factors correlating with burnout happen during residency as well. And there's a huge concern right now among young physicians who are identified early in their careers with having burnout.
Well, there was a systematic review and meta-analysis that was just published on interventions to prevent and reduce physician burnout. And one intervention shown to have a positive impact on reducing burnout is mindfulness-based approaches.
Well, you better tell people what mindfulness is, Ken.
Well, it'd probably be easier to tell them what it isn't. It's not a religion. I want to be clear about that, of any kind. Mindfulness, it's paying attention to both your internal and external world. It's being present in the moment and being non-judgmental.
Yeah, and that sounds woohoo, but it really isn't. It's just a matter of if all of us can concentrate the way we do on our jobs and listening to a murmur or when you drive, you can certainly spend time learning how to do this, live in the moment in a non-judgmental and present way. You know, this idea of mindfulness meditation was started thousands of years ago, probably by Buddha, but it may even predate him. And it wasn't meant to cure any illness, but mainly was meant to end mental suffering. It spread basically out from Northeast India near Nepal and was eventually discovered in the Western world when the British in the 1800s colonized basically everything, including India.
And there was another wave of mindfulness into the West in the mid 20th century. And this came with the Beatles. They were a huge part of it, the British invasion, bringing meditation and mindfulness when they came and became practitioners. And it was in 1975 that a group of individuals started the Insight Meditation Society in Massachusetts.
And then in 1979, interestingly enough, it was a molecular biologist from MIT. You'd think that would be the most science-y of the science people. But basically, his name was Dr. Jon Kabat-Zinn, and he developed a mindfulness-based stress reduction program, MSBR program, that consisted of an 8-week course. It was first used as an adjunct to add to medical regular medical treatment for people who had chronic pain and other chronic illnesses.
Well, researchers have been looking into the therapeutic effects of mindfulness ever since. And you know what I did just before we started recording? I went to PubMed and I searched mindfulness meditation.
What'd you get? What happened?
1,300 plus
Amazing.
Citations.
Yeah. So it's not that woohoo out there. It's being studied quite a bit.
Well, it's being looked into by a lot of people. What's the clinical question we want to answer today?
So this question today is, can a mindfulness program reduce stress and burnout among interns on an emergency medicine rotation?
And what reference do you have?
So the reference we're using is Ireland et al., a randomized controlled trial of mindfulness to reduce stress and burnout among intern medical practitioners. It was published in Medical Teacher 2017.
Let's run through the PICO. What was the population?
Intern doctors that were completing their emergency medical rotation in the ED.
All right. And what was the intervention?
It was a 10-week mindfulness training intervention.
And what did they compare it to?
They compared to the other group that got 1 hour of extra time off per week.
All right. And what was their outcome?
So they looked at the Copenhagen Burnout Inventory, which is a 19-item questionnaire in the same three dimensions as the Maslach we were talking about earlier. And then a stress measurement as well called the Perceived Stress Scale, which is a 10-item questionnaire. So they looked at burnout and stress.
All right. And the author's conclusions were, quote, mindfulness interventions may provide medical practitioners with skills to effectively manage stress and burnout, thereby reducing their experience of these symptoms. It is likely that doctors would benefit from the inclusion of such training program as part of their general medical education.
Okay, that's pretty strong stuff.
All right, let's run through the quality checklist for RCTs, randomized clinical trials, and we've got 11 questions. Question number one. The study population, did it include or focused on those in the emergency department?
Yeah, it did. These were medical interns that were doing a rotation in the emergency department.
Were the interns adequately randomized?
It's not entirely clear from the study.
Did they conceal the randomization?
Can't really tell that either.
Well, how about the interns? Were they analyzed in the groups that they were randomized?
That they did do. They did stick to those groups, but they didn't explicitly state that it was an intention to treat analysis in that particular manner.
All right. The study interns were recruited consecutively.
Yes.
All right. The interns in both groups were similar with regards to prognostic factors.
No, we really don't know. There was no demographic or gender information given for the groups themselves. And the control groups did start with a higher stress level.
Were all participants unaware of group allocation?
No.
All right. All groups, were they treated equally except for the intervention?
It's not entirely clear on that either. The control group could have been what they call contaminated through transfer of information. That might have limited the effect size. And that just is if the group getting the mindfulness talked in the hallway to the non-mindful group.
All right. Question nine. Was the follow-up complete?
Yes.
Were all intern important outcomes considered?
And that's not clear.
Okay. And was the treatment effect large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant?
And that's also not clear.
All right, let's go through those key results then. They had 44 interns, and the response rate was?
100%.
100%. Agreed to do the study, and the mean age was 27 years, with about two-thirds being female. So what was the primary outcome?
So the outcomes that they were looking at were looking at stress and burnout, and they found that for both stress and burnout, there was a significant reduction in the mindfulness group.
All right, Diane.
Go ahead, talk nerdy to me.
We're sitting oceanside, and I'm going to be talking a little nerdy by the beach. Okay, we're going to go through five things.
Okay.
Five limitations that may threaten the validity of this study. You've got the first one.
All right, so let's talk about randomization. They don't really explain how it was done, just that, quote, participants were randomly assigned to the intervention or control group, unquote. So did they just take every other intern that signed up and alternate them back and forth? Did they have a random number generator, or was there some other method? We don't know how they were randomized.
And the second limit was the blinding. Participants were not blinded to group assignment, and this could have biased the study towards a positive treatment effect.
Right. Then the other is, were the groups similar at baseline? And we really don't know if they were equal at baseline for things like age and gender. We do know, however, one thing they did do in this study is they did look for pre-test conditions of experience with mindfulness or meditation, or whether they thought mindfulness or meditation was a good thing. Did it appeal to them? Or did they have any expectations from mindfulness or meditation? And they did find that at least in those three general questions about mindfulness and meditation, the groups were equivalent. However, the treatment group itself reported higher perceived stress at baseline, and that could have inflated the treatment effect.
All right, and the fourth point was, were they treated equally? And again, we mentioned this earlier, it's unsure. We are unsure if both groups were treated equally except for the mindfulness intervention. And the authors did recognize this, and they said there could have been some contamination between the treatment group and the control group, and that could have been a transfer of information taking place between the two groups. But that, you know, would have decreased the effect size.
Right, so that actually would have, this probably didn't have a significant impact on this particular study. But the effect size itself, the effect size that they statistically measured on both stress and burnout was statistically significant. We don't really know if that translates into clinical significance. For instance, for an intern-oriented outcome, we would need many more people in the study, many more interns in the study, to know if it really decreased things like alcohol use or drug use or depression or suicide. And as far as patient-oriented outcomes, like medical errors, and et cetera, it's also very difficult from this study to know if we can tease that out. We need more participants to make that known.
Well, that's the end of the nerdy section. Let's comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the SGEM's conclusions.
So I think we agree.
Yeah.
I think this overall, the study did what it aimed to do. It's just small and we'd like more out there.
All right. Well, how about giving us an SGEM bottom line?
I think the bottom line is mindfulness meditation is something to consider when dealing with the stress of an emergency medicine rotation.
And can you resolve that case you started with?
So let me go back to this wonderful resident of mine who went from being just a superstar to someone clearly very unhappy and having trouble with interactions, etc. After I gave my little toolbox lecture, everyone around him noticed that he was much, much better. And it turns out what he did was took one of the things in the toolbox, which was to apply a daily mindfulness meditation practice based on a free app he downloaded on his phone that he now considers part of his daily routine, will not part with that, and it clearly has improved how he feels about his job.
So how are you going to take this one study and apply it clinically, considering the rest of the research that's out there?
Yeah, I'm not sure we know about the clinical impact yet. We need more studies to really know, is a calmer, happier doctor a better doctor? You would think it is, but we really need to know if there's more of a clinical impact. So to kind of fall back on an old standby phrase, more studies really are needed.
Well, spoiler alert, Diane and I are actually embarking on a research project.
It's pretty exciting, actually. Yeah. So keep an ear to the ground. At some point, you will hear about our intervention on mindfulness in emergency physicians.
So give us a window into what you would say to that intern, to the resident, either you were approached or that you noticed something.
So if I have a resident who comes to me, or if I'm feeling bad, or if I see a colleague that's having some trouble, the main thing here is to acknowledge it, to make everyone realize that it is completely normal, however, not something that should be ignored. There are ways to mitigate that, and you must mitigate that. So there's the basic things we know to stay healthy and to mitigate the stress. You need to eat well, you need to get enough sleep, and that has to be a priority considering the challenges we already have with sleep. You have to exercise regularly and stay socially connected. But to add to that list of the core things we know, consider something like mindfulness meditation. It may help, and there are a bunch of free resources available to you for this.
Well, it's time for the Keener Contest. Last week's winner was Dr. Rachel Rollins, a pediatric emergency medicine physician from the United Kingdom. She knew a buccal, also called a torus fracture, are defined as a compression of the bony cortex on one side with the opposite cortex remaining intact. In contrast, a greenstick fracture, the opposite cortex, is not intact. Diane, what's the question this week?
Okay, so all of you who hear this, you may date yourselves if you know the answer to this, but name the famous guru followed by the Beatles.
Oh, if you know the answer, then send an email to me at thesgem@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. The first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. Now, there are some other FOMED posts and resources on mindfulness, burnout, and stress, and we will list those in the show notes. And I want to say thank you to everyone out there who shared those resources with me.
So if you feel like you're burning out or you know someone who's showing some signs of burnout, then please reach out to them. Let them know they're not alone and let them know that there are resources available that can help.
And those are wise words from a legend of emergency medicine.
Goodness.
Thank you again, Diane, for coming on the SGM.
Thank you so much, Ken. I loved it. Should we sign off with Om?
I think we should.
Okay.
Ready?
Ready? Om.
But you have to give the SGM tagline.
Okay, we'll do that too. So remember, be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.